At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Are you tired of using Google Drive or Dropbox to send files to clients? Well, never get burned again with FilePass. I love and use FilePass exclusively for sending files to my clients. It's a cloud file sharing website specifically made by engineers for engineers. It's absolutely amazing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass to check out the full feature list and subscribe today. Never lose another dime to burned projects. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today, as always, is my lovely co-host, no nickname Lou.
That's right, we're passing it off today.
We're passing it off today. We have a nickname for our special guest, K-Stereo Kevin.
Hey everyone, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Kevin. Kevin is a representative of Sony, the music side of Sony. Right now, if you've noticed that my voice sounds very crisp, very nice, it's because we are recording just my voice with the Sony C80 microphone. We'll talk more about that a little bit later, but this episode is brought to you by Sony, and we're going to dive into a bunch of different products. Kevin, we met at NAMM 2 years ago. I think you were still working the booth then, and we're going to talk about my experience. Did you do it, Lou, when you did like the 360 audio thing with the headphones?
Oh, at NAMM?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That shit was crazy. We're going to talk about that.
NAMM is always a very unique place to try new things because sometimes you're just like, I don't even know what I'm trying out, but this is cool.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that 360 experience. We're going to talk about just Sony 360 and immersive audio in general and how it's music forward versus film forward with competitors. And real quickly, we're going to talk about hardware as well. But first, Kevin, tell us about what you do at Sony. And I mean, obviously you believe in the company and the product. Tell us some of your favorite things about Sony, man.
Thanks, D. Yeah, my favorite thing about Sony is just innovation. And it's they really want to make sure that everything is accessible. So right now we're working on a lot of products that allow people to mix an immersive at their home studio. One of those products is a plugin called the 360 Reality Audio Walk Mix Creator. And it's a plugin that allows you to take any DAW you use and use stereo routing and mix in any immersive format, especially 360 RA. And that immersive format is all object-based. So that means you can render to any speaker layout. You just tell Sony what your speaker layout is of your studio, and we can create a custom profile for you. They actually have delay compensation in the plugin, which is super helpful. So you can get a laser ruler on Amazon and measure the polar coordinates, that's radius, azimuth, and elevation, of your studio, and the delay compensation can happen in the plugin. It is better if you tune your own system, of course, but if you don't have the ability to do that, the system tunes itself based on location, which is super helpful for the DIY creator. And then we have a headphone monitoring system called VME, which you put small in-ear microphones in your ears, and you get measured at a studio or your home studio, we actually offer measurements as well. You can go to 360 VME on Google, scroll down to the bottom and inquire if you want to check it out. But it allows you to have an immersive studio in your headphones. It can work for any speaker layout. It can work for stereo if you want to measure your stereo mixing or mastering room. But it works very well for immersive as well. So if you don't have the ability to set up speakers, tune your room, or if you're living in a space where you can't make a lot of loud noises, it's really helpful to have that profile in your headphones, and it sounds 100% accurate to the speakers.
That's really cool.
Did you do the thing at NAMM a couple of years ago or last year with where you go into like their room at NAMM?
Oh, I didn't do that. No.
And they literally put in microphones that's like dangling from a spring. Like it looks like a wound paperclip, and they put it in your ear. So it measures exactly. And they have like these Genelec speakers around you, and it measures how, not just the sound of the Genelecs, but how it enters your freaking ear canals. And dude, it's.
And you can use this to measure a room?
Okay. So you didn't do this. You didn't do this.
No. Hold on. This is okay. Hold on. You know how I get when I get excitedly fascinated by something? You're telling me that this thing is a microphone in your ear, and you can
no. They capture the signal.
Yeah.
So it's a customized binaural measurement.
So it's like sound HRTF. ID for headphones.
So instead of using like one of those dummy heads, like from Neumann or other brands and things of that nature, you plug them in yourself.
Exactly.
So, but it's not a binaural mic. It's literally just a measuring device.
Yeah.
So here's how it works. Like in the NAMM booth when I did this a year ago, not this last NAMM, but the one before, went to the booth. They had these Genelecs. They had you listen to like a 30-second demo, and then you put in the headphones on, or sorry, you put the suspended microphones in both ears, and then you put the headphones on top of the microphones, then you take off the headphones, so it like measures the Genelecs and how it enters your ear canals, and then it measures the headphones and how the headphones enter your ear canals, and then they play the demo again, but you cannot tell it's not coming from the Genelecs.
Okay.
Like, you know how picky I am with sound?
Yeah.
It freaked me the hell out.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. Like, this, I think, is... Correct me if this is a plausible use of this, because this is just me thinking out loud. I know I have some projects lined up where I'm going to be out of town. I had to fly out of town for a few weeks at a time to do some studio designs. I would hate to have to rely on headphones that I almost never use in general, personally. Because I'm so far away from my Strauss, which I love and I know them and I work on them every day.
Which is your speakers.
Could I, in theory, take the headphones with me and keep that profile in them?
Exactly. Yes.
That is full.
Dude, and it sounds like it's your room. So it's like that, you know, that Slate VMS thing, but it's your room. The only thing that Kevin was talking about is that it's like hyper proprietary.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you want to get a calibration of your room, you have to pay potentially a couple $1,000s for like a team. And if you're really far away, like if they have to fly the team out, that's an expense that's coming out of your pocket. But like,
hopefully they're close to Orange County.
But the point is that they have the tools to get a team out to you to measure your room and your freaking ear canals. So it's not just how the room sounds, but it's how the room sounds, how you hear it. And like, okay, when we did the demo, it literally, like, it freaked me out. Like, I took off the headphones and there was no music playing. It was just the headphones. And it was like the strangest. I've never felt that. And you know how picky I am with like audio and sound. Like, I get really picky.
Yeah. And
it was really weird. I couldn't tell. I literally could not tell.
I'm not going to lie. And I'm a big believer in, I'm not even going to say a big believer. I'm a big advocate for mainly mixing out of speakers, just because it's the thing I've known for so long that like sometimes mixing in headphones is so much better off when you're traveling, inconsistent workspaces, things of that nature. We've talked about it a million times on the podcast, but if you're telling me I can take my room with me and it's the room I've been working in for like a year, 2 years, and like I'm going to be abroad for like 2 weeks, but I still have deadlines, like, hell yeah.
I've done full immersive deliverables from start to finish using virtual mixing environment. Like, I was on a trip in New York, and we had a deadline, and I mixed something from start to finish in VME, delivered it, knowing that it sounds just like the speakers.
So question, VME, I'm assuming does not work like a plugin. But can it work in collaboration with 360?
It can work in collaboration with any format. It's basically
how does
a rendering.
Does Vimeo work?
So it's a standalone software, and you import your profile. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's going to render the speakers that you are measured in. So if you're measured in a 360 room, which is 13 speakers, you will be able to output to those 13. If you're measured in an Atmos room, like 714, 916, you would be outputting to that. But you can also take your immersive layout in the standalone software, and you can just route stereo to it too. So
nice.
Yeah, see, I was thinking about just stereo. Just literally, if I could take my room with me stereo.
Yeah.
I don't like not even the surround. That's already an amazing offering. So yeah. It's literally like, so you're saying that it's just an output device. You can set it up just like an output device. So basically, I don't mean to compare, but like Sound ID, where you could just set it up as an output device. It works through the DAW. Another thing that you could do, so there's three offerings that we need to talk about with Sony. And I wanna change gears a little bit because this is super exciting.
Yeah.
And this technology is insane. But the one that I'm thinking people do wanna talk about, let's briefly go over the hardware offerings. And one of the things that I didn't realize is that Sony has a pro audio offerings as well as like consumer grade offerings. Consumer grade is like wireless, Bluetooth earbuds or headphones type things. But they have right now, correct me if I'm wrong, two Pro Audio Line headphones. And I'm using one right now, the MV1. They're the open back mastering grade headphones from rated from 5 hertz.
To 40K?
To 80K.
80K.
80K. And then they have the one that everybody knows. What was it? The MDR 7506, which is like the
Yeah, those are the classic cans, if you will. Everybody knows them as the Sony cans.
Yeah.
And then I think there's one model after that, right? 7520 or something like that. They're just like a bigger cup or something like that.
We do have some Z7 Mark IIs. We have like the Z1Rs. But mainly for our pro stuff, it's the MV1 and 7506,
which is really interesting. Like Sony, okay, and then obviously the mic. Everybody knows the C800G.
Yeah,
we've said a lot of things about the C800G.
A lot.
It is undeniably an industry standard.
Yep.
It is also $10,000 brand new. $11,000 brand new.
Don't get tricked by the $999.
it's $11,000 plus tax afterwards if you
but and don't forget your soul.
But they also have two other offerings people don't talk about, which is the C100, which is about $1,100,000.
And I think that's the dual capsule option, like a micro capsule and then a small.
And you can change the polar pattern. You can change the polar pattern.
You can. And it goes up to 40K.
Nice.
Which is great.
Oh, so it's another 40
kilohertz, not 40,000.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I knew about as a friend of mine brought it over once to the studio, and it sounded killer on his acoustic guitar. Like he specifically like came to the studio. We were tracking like his band and everything. And he's like, by the way, can we track my guitar with this one? And I was like, oh, it looks like a little snowman in there.
Yeah, and yeah.
Have you ever seen the capsule on the C100?
Is it like the literally two capsules on
like
top of each other?
A little one and then a fat one.
Oh, and is then that okay? That's just a regular body. I have seen that actually.
Yeah,
and the one that I'm using right now is the C80, which is the $500 offering. Kevin, you literally on a professional level talk about and compare these microphones.
tell us
your opinion on the differences between the C80, the C100 compared to the C800.
So the C800 is known for its characteristics. It does have a cutoff at 18K.
I didn't know that.
It also has a pretty high boost at around 10K as well. That's what gives it that brightness. That being said, the C80 is super close. I've compared the two multiple times at NAMM and in a studio environment, and it's pretty hard to tell the difference. The only difference is the C80 has a bit more body to it, which I actually appreciate for a vocal.
Yeah, that's like the one thing that we have to say is you want more body to complement the high end.
Yeah, the 1073 does a lot of helping in that department, which is probably why that combo is so, synonymous with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But right now, the C80 is my secret weapon when I go to a session. One, because it's incredibly small and it's very easy to set up. And two, because it outperforms any other mic that I've use that at the studio. Literally bring it and someone has an expensive mic sitting there. And I'm like, hey, can we try this? And I put the C80 up and they're like, wow, what type of mic is that? And I tell them, and they're really confused how a mic that's that price performs that well.
Yeah. And the C100, the C80 seems to be like a more affordable, compact version of the C800, trying to be similar, like as far as like sound wise. But is the C100 just a totally different product to begin with the dual capsules? Like it's trying to achieve something else?
I was going to actually ask that because being that the C100 has the dual capsule, there's a smaller one on top of it. Is this the same capsule as the lower capsule?
It's a bit different. It's similar, but it's different. The C100 is a high res microphone. It's great for vocals. It's really, really good for instruments, for overheads. The C80 is more of an all-around microphone that's also great for instruments. Because it has a cutoff at 20K, if you need to pitch tune something or tune something down 6 semitones, I would say the C100 is better because it does record past your audible range, right? Yeah. So that's the main reason for it, is high-res recording. That being said, I've used it on vocals. It sounds great. The C80 is just a bit more forgiving for me. Because of the cutoff and just because it's a vocal centered mic.
Yeah.
And the purpose of like high res audio and like in general, clocking sessions at like 192 kilohertz in general, like nobody's hearing frequencies above 20K really. But from what I understand, that as a utility is important because it kind of future proofs audio. Is that kind of what
I've kind of understood it to be? And correct me if I'm wrong here, maybe this is not the goal, but I've kind of understood it as like headroom. Like if you're able to span that far with such consistency and accuracy mechanically, then you're that much better off even in the center of that range, which would be like the 20 to 20K. You know, that would perform that much better because you're able to hit 40K with such ease, you know, versus some mic manufacturers like the C800. Some people call it dark because of that 18K roll-off, while like the 251 is rated to go to like 21, supposedly. But that's kind of been my understanding of like those expanded lines. Like, why does it go so high? It's just because it's supposed to outperform its actual intended range.
Yeah. I also didn't even realize, like, if you record something with a 40 to 80K top-end limit, if you pitch it down an entire octave, a 20K signal would become 10K.
Yeah.
So it's like if you record it up to 40K, you can pitch it down a couple octaves and really warble it. It would still have information. And like 20K, that's interesting. I didn't even consider that.
Yeah. I wonder how that works with certain interfaces have an anti-aliasing chip where they'll purposely round off 20K or 21 or whatever just to make sure that their converters don't have other issues.
You can also mess with anti-aliasing on like any sort of like Bitcrush plugin. They typically have like a Bitcrush plugin that like where you lower the sample rate. Mm-hmm. You can also like the one that I'm thinking of is the free one from Kilohertz.
I don't have
Kilohertz.
Kilohertz.
Yeah. You could actually like a lot of these Bitcrush ones. You could change like the sample conversion, and you can add dither. So it's like you could change the sound of the Bitcrushing. But there's like anti-aliasing chips. Just really interesting.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, huh? I wonder, because I know certain manufacturers supposedly, I've never actually cared to look that deep into it, but supposedly their marketing is like, oh yeah, our converters can actually record up to like 40K or something. It's like, did you just make the anti-aliasing chip just a variable position depending on sample rate that you choose? Or like how?
That's another thing. You have to make sure that you're recording at high sample rates too. Yeah. Like if you're recording at 44.1 or 48,
then you're not going to get that 40K.
Exactly. Yeah. So you need to make sure you're recording at like 96 or 192.
If I could afford the memory space, I'd always be in 96. I'll master in 96, but tracking sessions at 96 is just like, it's a test of your computer's willpower.
I make distorted TikTok pop music, so I don't need anything past 12K.
32 kilohertz, 8-bit. That's DK's recording rate.
Literally, so like right now, I'm mixing for a couple artists, Barely Human and Odatari, and dude, they bit crush all their stuff. Anyways, it's like whatever, dude. It's so fun. Like these mixes go down to like -3 LUFS. It's ridiculous, but it's so much fun. It's punk rock, dude. Anyway, These headphones, I'm using the MV ones right now. These are the higher end $500 ones.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, they're $400. Yeah.
$400. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And then the MDR 7506, I think those are like the classic $100, $90 benchmark ish.
I think they're like $99 typically, right? I don't know if they've gone through a price change.
You can definitely look around there. You can get them for pretty cheap right now.
Okay, I will say this. This is a personal opinion. Nobody's paying me to say this, actually.
Your opinion is wrong.
Yeah, my opinion is, no, I'm definitely right. I'm definitely 100% right, always. I'm never wrong.
Don't forget to call him daddy when you acknowledge that.
But I actually, okay, Lou, this is going to upset you.
Oh.
This is going to upset you. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to need to open a pack of Pokemon cards right after this.
I actually, and this is my opinion, I don't know if Kevin's even allowed to, like, legally allowed to comment on what I'm about to say. Yeah. But I personally prefer the sound of Sony headphones over Beyerdynamics. Dynamics. Even the cheaper Sony ones.
Okay. Okay. Hold on. I'm not offended by that. I will say that. I'm not offended
by
it.
Okay. But I'm just treating you like a Beyerdynamic apologist, dude. I'm
like, well, I'll say it like this. I do like Beyerdynamic, but I like them for the same reason that I like ATC, which is that they don't actually sound that amazing. They just do something really cool. And I can, and I know what I'm looking for when I listen to them.
Well, that's how I feel about the Sonys, dude. The Sonys are like really very high utility, affordable. They're really light. I'm wearing these MV1s right now, dude. Mm-hmm. They're the lightest headphones I've worn in a while, which is like, and the cushioning is super soft too. Sorry, I'm coming off a little bit salesy. I'm not trying to.
No. I mentioned this earlier off air, which was when I first walked in. You were testing the headphones. You're like, "Hey, Lou, take a listen to them." But I'm wearing a hat because I need a haircut, and normally I don't like wearing headphones while wearing a hat. And this is, I'm gonna lean on you for this one too. But Beyerdynamics suck when wearing hats. When wearing a hat, I hate to say, but like their cushions are a little too dense for hats. So, but the first thing I noticed is like, yeah, the cushion just kind of seeped onto me. It kind of seemed to feel like it molded. I don't know how you feel with your glasses on, but a big tell for me is usually like if the glasses suddenly start pressing on me a little too hard, or if I feel like I'm getting too much outer noise into the headphones because something is holding them open. And I didn't have that experience earlier on first listen to the point where I remember like taking the headphones off to hear if speakers were going or not. And I put them back on and I'm like, no, they're actually sealed off. Yeah, the hat didn't do anything weird to it.
Yeah, there's so you're talking about like comfort and the seal around your,
because we talk about
skull.
Fatigue, right? Like we talk about fatigue when mixing on speakers, headphones, like certain people's are different than everybody's ears are different than each other. Anybody that says that they can hear all the same things their neighbor can hear is full of shit.
Okay, but hold on. But well, yeah, have you seen like Twitch streamers when they take off their headphones, they got like an indent in their skull? Okay, that's unrelated. But Kevin, you know what I'm talking about.
Exactly,
they got that dent in their skull. Yeah. Okay, yeah, we did some testing with the MV1s, and we typically, how do I want to say this? I don't typically like endorse things unless I really believe in it. We were listening to it before. I really, really like the sound of these MV1s. This is perfect timing because I'm going to Japan in June to July for like a month.
Yeah, yeah.
And when that happens, like I'm going to have to go to a pro audio shop. I'm going to buy some speakers. Like I'm going to have to, I'm going to figure out a way where I can do some work out there.
Sell the Calis and buy the Calis again.
I already sold my Calis, Yeah, and sound by him again. But we're going to go out there, and I was considering, I needed some headphones for sure. And I feel really, I was listening to this with and without Sound ID. And like I told you, like you were listening before, like I actually prefer these with less Sound ID.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of been my experience with any headphones and Sound ID. And it's nothing against it. It's like I just don't know how they can calibrate for manufacturing differences per unit. You know, every speaker is different. You know, that's why they'll never tell you it's perfect match. It's just it's within a plus or minus 1 decibel difference of each other.
Yeah. But the point is these headphones.
Yeah.
What did you think about it?
Honestly speaking,
no bullshit.
No bullshit.
No bullshit.
All right. You know my test. It's till now by Banks.
Banks, yeah.
Everybody's scared of the song because they think their speakers are going to explode at the ending. And that's kind of my, not goal, but my hope that people feel like that. Like, who, like,
because it's so dynamic. It starts quiet. It's
it
like,
starts
no
quiet,
way.
But there's so much information in the lows, the low mids, the panning. It's constantly moving. There's the only thing that stays constant is Banks's vocal in the middle. Her lead vocal just stays there. And even that vocal is like fucking crushed to shit and distorted to shit. But there's also like this, like, certain amount of beauty behind it too. But stereo placement in those headphones were actually great. It actually felt like the, when we talk about width in our monitors, like on our speakers, we're always playing with our position of the speakers, which you saw my content recently, DK. Like, I've been testing and measuring everything, taking day after day, listening into different position in my new space and just trying to find that perfect spot where I have transient response is good, low end response is good, stereo width is good. But in the headphones right away, it felt very comfortable listening to the panning where, are these open back?
They are, yes.
Okay, that makes sense because sometimes with like any headphone, it doesn't even have to be open back or closed back, but more so with closed back where it just feels too wide or like too in your left ear. It didn't feel like it panned to the left. It just felt like it just shifted into your left ear. This felt very open. It felt like it panned in the room versus it panned in your headphone. And that's what I was listening for in that test. I will say this though, if you know the 7506s, this is not a shot at the headphone, nor is it meant to be a shot. In fact, this might be a compliment if your name is Jesse. Because Jesse fucking loves NS10s, but the MDR 7506s have always been kind of considered the NS10s of studio headphones because they don't have a lot of low end, which means they're great for tracking because you can turn them up loud without low end distorting the living shit out of them. But because of that, it's very focused in the mids. And because
which
of that,
it's great for that click too.
Exactly. So in these, I noticed that they had a similar presence in like that the low end isn't like boomy like in the Audio-Technicas or things like that. The low mids weren't kind of thick and I wouldn't say muddy, but like Behr Dynamics where they're like, if you don't know that you're specifically listening to a lot of low mids, you might think like the headphones are dark. It's just that they're very thick. These sounded very open. They didn't really have a tonal characteristic. And that's what I like.
Yeah.
The panning stood out because of space, but tone-wise, very neutral.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the next thing. Sorry, because we need to talk about Sony 360. But I will say this. Lou and I have been very critical. Sorry, Kevin. We've been very critical about the C800G. Mm-hmm. And that's specifically because it's $11,000. And during the pandemic, it was like $20,000, $25,000.
Yeah. Like, I helped friends find people that were willing to sell them for less. And the cheapest I was ever able to find somebody, Mike, was like 16.
And the reason why I'm critical is because everything about this podcast is about empowering those that want to do music. And the problem, like, it's more of like a philosophical issue. Like, if you are not able to buy a $10,000 microphone, you shouldn't feel like you're going to make less quality music. Like, that shouldn't be a thing, you know? But that being said, knowing that you can get something similar quality for $500,
that opens up the opportunity to everybody.
Yeah, now we're just we have everything except excuses. Like at that moment, but it's like I think that's like really empowering. So if you're a huge fan of that, like that brighter Sony C800 type sound, there's other offerings available, including the Hi-Fi 100, the C100. And it seems like there's a, like getting a stereo pair of C80s is very feasible.
Yeah, to be honest. Like if this is kind of a funny comparison, but like there's many industries where like you have different people manufacturing the same product, right? Like this one was manufactured by this warehouse and this one is another warehouse. A good example of this is like Pokemon cards. It's so weirdly specific. English cards versus Japanese cards. Everybody says Japanese cards look that much better, but to be honest, no. I will say this. There actually is a visual difference, but it's the same fucking card. It's the same thing. It's just that one just has a little less detail in it, but you're also spending 100 times less. So if that 5% difference wasn't the deal breaker for you, why wouldn't you want to save 100 times less? If this mic is $500 and the other one is 20 times more expensive, but you only get 5% difference, I'm listening to $500.
And for me, also, the last thing I'll say about this microphone is we have owned and used a Sony C800 clone. And it will stay unnamed for the sake of this podcast.
Yeah.
Why would you buy a clone when you can just get the 80 at this point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. That's
it's
just
the
what
perfect
it comes
answer
to.
To the market at this point.
Period. Period. Done.
You also don't need a power supply. It's just phantom power, which is
there
great.
You go.
It fits in your
and
backpack.
I know there's no video to this, but like if you were to look at it, the descriptor is elegantly cute.
The microphone, the way it looks. Are we talking about the aesthetics?
Yeah, the aesthetic elegantly of the mic cute. Is like it's that Sony matte black microphone that everybody loves with the white engraving. It's very simple. It's just cardioid fixed, right? It's got a pad. It's got a roll off. It's nothing crazy about it. But I think one of the coolest features on it is not even the mic. It's the shock mount, which a lot of shock mounts, you're kind of stuck to a certain position. But they have that, I guess, twist lock, like pressure lock on it. So if you need it to point in a certain direction and you don't want the shock mount, like the back of it being in front or back or whatever, you can point
it
at any angle.
It's not screw on. It's like that.
It's pressure locked. Yeah, which is really nice.
Okay. Another thing, the last thing I'll say about this is my buddy now officially, well, I think he had a Grammy before, but our buddy, do you know Daniel Escobar? Danny Escobar. He's new to LA, like only been here a couple of years, but he just won a Grammy for doing the Barbie record with Lizzo.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, I think it was with Lizzo.
Yeah, because.
And that was, but it was the Barbie record that won a Grammy, and it was this last Grammy, and he owns and was speaking, like he tracks on 800 Gs every day at his studio. And his personal take home mic was the C100. He's like, this is what I use when they don't have a C800G offering.
Yeah.
And I think that says volumes because he knows what he's doing. He's like one of those young heads that's like currently in the active music industry right now. Not one of those legends long gone. he is currently a legend. So it's very high words for that. Anyway, let's go into...
If you don't mind me mentioning really quick, there are two other small mics that Sony offers. Mm-hmm. They're the ECM-100U and the ECM-100N. Mm-hmm. They're Electrek condensers. The U is unidirectional cardioid and the N is Omni. They're really, really good for instruments and for drums. They also are high res. They're super, super clean.
UCM?
ECM-100U and ECM-100N.
Okay, cool. We'll have to look into those.
I just wanted to mention those. Thank you.
Yeah. And real quick, this is interesting. The first thing we need to talk about. So now we're going to talk about Sony 360, which is... conceptually super interesting. Personal opinion. I do think it sounds, I think for music, it sounds better than other more popular immersive formats. That's all I'm going to say. I think it sounds better. And this is my biggest complaint with the big A immersive audio, the one that's been on all these magazine stuff, is that from film, TV, watching Amazon, you know, or like Netflix on my headphones, fine.
Yeah.
But if you listen to it with music, it just like sounds like they're just adding a room reverb. Like it's kind of pretty black.
Yeah. I've had that experience. And to be honest, like it's.
We're talking about big A right now.
Yeah. The way I would say it like is this. I do not mix or master in Atmos because I have not had enough of a demand for it. And it has not been enough of a fueler reason for me to go into it. The cost of entry, most cases, is just astronomically not comparable unless you already have a demand for it.
Okay, so the reason why I would bring this up is because I didn't know this. Atmos is film and TV forward. So they have like an LFE channel, which if this is the first time you're hearing about this on the podcast, film and TV, the way they manage their sound and how they send audio to the different speakers, so with like a 2.1 or a 2.2 setup where you have I have two main speakers and two subwoofers.
Yeah.
So the crossover, it goes through the subwoofer into the headphone or into the main speakers, or I have them externally crossed over. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's not a separate channel. The output, the master bus still sends a left and a right channel. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But with film and TV, like let's say you have like a 5.1 setup, like anything that goes to the subwoofer is a separate channel.
Yeah.
So it's that 0.1. So like you have to, it's kind of like on Pro Tools, it's like a reverb send where you actually have to send that track signal to the LFE channel. So if you have an explosion, you're going to have to automate that LFE. It's interesting. I think it does solve a few problems for the film and TV industry, but Sony, I just found out, you just told me, Kevin, doesn't have an LFE channel.
Yeah.
And it is a music centric immersive audio format rather than a film centric immersive audio format. Okay. So, tell us a little bit about, Sony in like trying to do more music forward and what it means. What does not having an LFE mean? Like bass management stuff.
So we have, we rely on bass management. So basically you get full frequency response from all of your speakers up until a crossover frequency if you want to set that for your sub. Mm-hmm. And that just gives you a more flat, which is a mixing focused environment. Mm-hmm. It also makes the mix translate to how the mixer or the artist wanted you to hear it. Mm-hmm. Because you're hearing on an environment that's flat. You're not hearing on a bass hyped environment or something with a curve. Other immersive formats do have a specific curve applied to them. Ours is completely flat. We actually like for people to tune their system as flat as possible to get the most accurate monitoring.
You know, I did forget about that. Certain immersive audio styles and like 5.1, I do remember seeing that their curves kind of tilt towards the low end being a little bit hyped. And I completely forgot about that curve. So that actually... actually makes a lot of sense why you guys would go flat. Cause when we consider like mixing music for 5.1, we don't actually ever think in the sense of LFE channels. We don't. In fact, is so much so that if you ever do post production in Pro Tools, you'd know that the LFE channel is not a separate fader unless you can enable that. I may not be, you know, professional enough in that realm to say that there's a separate fader that you can enable, but I've never seen a separate fader enabled outside of like clicking on the pan pot section where you get the little mapping. And then there's a specific LFE thing there. So it's a two-step process just to get to the LFE, but we don't deal with that in mixing music, at least not in a stereo format.
That's been the biggest annoying thing. Like if you're trying to mix, like if you're trying to, I think they call it up mixing, right? When you have a stereo, you mix a stereo and you up mix it to immersive.
Yeah.
You know, it's
so much so that like, I don't know if you've seen some people like posting videos of like their work and stuff like that, how they mix in Atmos or in other formats like 5.1, 7.1, whatever. They always have like these down mix channels to monitor from. And that's kind of the crazy thing. Like the fact that you have to create custom routing within your template just to monitor different formats.
Yeah. And then, you brought up like the third party plugins and it's so much more extra stuff. And again, it's for film and TV. Mm-hmm. But again, my biggest complaint is Atmos folded down just loses punch. Sorry. Again, like I don't want to talk too much about that, but the kick and snare just disappears.
Yeah.
And for me, that's such a big deal. I've talked about how much punch is important to me. I mean, we both own speakers.
Yeah, that is all about fucking punch.
Yeah, it's about the punch. It's a transient response is the most important part.
It's kind of like I mentioned earlier. Like I loved the ATCs when we had them. I still will one day buy another set of ATCs because of how much I loved them. But punch would not be a descriptor. Smack would be a descriptor for ATCs, but punch was not one of them. And when we heard the Strauss's for the first time, we're like, holy shit, did you hear that bottom of the snare?
Yeah.
That shit just fucking kicked my ass.
Yeah. It's wild.
It was great.
Yeah. But I'm going back to the Sony 360 here. With music, how have you seen producers use Sony 360? Okay, first off, this is a technical question. Right now, if you wanted to upload to Apple, because Apple is right now promoting spatial audio, like a ton.
Yeah.
There's rate increases, things of that nature. Sony 360 is compatible with that spatial audio format.
Sony 360 is available on Amazon Music and Tidal right now. We're not available on Apple at the moment, but you can use the WalkMix Creator tool to re-render to Atmos. You can actually take our tool and you
do
speaker
cool.
renders, and then you just basically put those in a 702 channel or a 904 or like a an audio track in Pro Tools and route that to the Atmos
render.
And
that's automatic. That's just like some coding thing. It just automatically exports like that, or do you have to do something?
So you basically just export from our plugin, and each channel would be named with the polar positioning of each channel. Yeah. Positive is to the left, negative is to the right. Mm-hmm. Happy to explain that more. But basically, it allows you to take those tracks, throw them into a bed track in Atmos. I actually like the way that objects render, personally.
Okay.
So I would make a speaker channel object per channel if you want to re-render. And I totally understand for DIY creators the need to be able to be on every DSP in immersive. That makes total sense. Yeah. So all Sony
products
are...
The thing is, you can. You just have to re-render an extra version specific for Apple. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's really cool that that's a feature that's available. Now, the thing that I heard was 7.02, which means that you're not rendering to the LFE.
Right.
Main reason for that, just to reconfirm, is because we're working with full range. We're not working with like dedicated outputs for specific frequency ranges.
At this moment, WalkMix is specifically dedicated to full frequency range. Mm-hmm. I would say that, so all Sony products are format agnostic. So
format agnostic. Yeah. That's pretty
I fucking
fire.
I love that.
Yeah, what is that? Go ahead.
It basically allows you to listen to any immersive format from DTSX, 360, Atmos on an immersive home theater system made by Sony. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a one size fit all tool.
Nice.
Yeah, and you can also just export into a binaural fold down as well. So if you mix an immersive, Kevin was showing me last week using the plugin. So things that are, in layman's term, very simple. The plugin, you get the plugin, you put it on the master bus, can't have any other plugins on it. And then you put one at the end of each individual track as like a single instance. Mm-hmm. And then it sums into that master bus plugin. You bounce it normally, and I guess it creates, I don't know exactly how it works, but then you open up the plugin, and then the plugin rebounces it again in that immersive audio format. And then you can select which ways you want it to be bounced.
Yeah.
So there's like a binaural headphone option, there's the Atmos or the other options, there's different types of like dot wave, dot FLAC, dot...
Right, so you have like ADM, we have a Sony-specific ADM, you have headphone renders, speaker renders, which would allow you to render to those other immersive formats.
You can render out in ADM?
Yeah.
From the plugin, too, so it's not rendering...
So you don't even need the ADM codec at that point.
Right now, you can't deliver that ADM to Apple. It doesn't accept it because there are these like small integers.
So you're still, if you wanted to turn in an ADM file to Apple, you'd still need the codec.
Right, so you would need to do speaker renders and then re-render into Atmos using the Atmos renderer.
Yeah, but you can monitor what the ADM would sound like at that point.
Totally, yeah. So we have a WalkMix player application that comes with the plugin, and you can monitor your exports from there without having to open up your DAW.
Awesome.
And it just follows the speaker layout of the plugin itself. Mm-hmm. One other thing I wanted to mention about 360 is we believe in phase alignment in speaker positioning. Nice. Which is another really important aspect, in my opinion. That's why we're a sphere, because the radius is constant between speakers from the listening position.
Yeah. Hold on, let me explain that real quick for those that don't understand. If you've ever opened up any sort of like Atmos sort of mixing template, it's usually like XY axis square box, and then you move the dot. And so panning 360, you like move this circle, like this little dot within a box shape. And that's how you do the surround sound stuff.
And then, not only that, but the big part of it being the in phase is everybody's monitoring positions can be different, especially in a home environment, which is why certain immersive audio like styles just don't full, like, I guess they don't come back to the consumer in the way that they heard it in a professional environment, where in this case, being that it's equal distant in every direction, it's a lot easier to actually maintain translation between consumer devices.
Yeah. And so with the plugin, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. I've never seen this before. It's you're literally, they've got this like little rendered head shape thing in the middle. And the way you pan things around is moving dots around this head. And you have a Y axis or what are the three that you call it? The elevation.
It's polar coordinates. So it's
The azimuth,
which is angle, left and right. Elevation, which is angle up and down. And then radius is positioning from the listening position. Right now, radius isn't a parameter. But that being said, like, the reason why phase alignment is so important in positioning is so you don't get, obviously, phase, but you don't get also, like, audible dropouts. So in some studios I've been to, if I pan something around and it's a phantom center between the surround channels, it can actually dip between 3 and 6 dB in level, which is a huge problem when you're monitoring, because you might end up turning that up. And then in someone else's system that is properly aligned, it'll be really loud.
For an example of that, if you're working in a home studio or even in a pro studio that's not fully treated, or at least not treated with intention, walk into a room node spot. Like, just play a song with a ton of low end and just stand in the one spot that has that low end really loud, and then take two steps forward and watch it disappear. That's kind of that experience of losing that phantom speaker position.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that prioritizing speaker phase was not a given.
It's not. And especially because this was the big, so I'm sure you remember, like, when Atmos wasn't, like, as popular as it is now, like, everybody was still, like, on the fence, like, oh, is people really going to do immersive audio? Is this just 5.1 that's going to phase out in a year? You know, because 5.1's been around for a long time, but we've seen all types of surround platforms just kind of come in and go. But recently we've seen kind of a trend of it staying. So we'll see what's going on.
Again,
now
for film and TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Every new generation they introduce, it stays for film and TV. But for music,
it's a very niche, and it's like, we'll see how everything goes. But because of that, most consumers that want to hear their songs in a certain way have, like, how many people's houses that have, like, a consumer and 5.1 setup is actually set up properly in the proper position, where they actually time align their seating position to the back left and right, the front left and right, the center and the sub is placed in the proper placement and has actually been tuned. I've been to maybe like one spot that was like that, and that guy paid money for that room. And the only reason I went to that spot is because I was paid to actually go set up the speakers. Yeah. You know, so this guy was investing into a properly set up room for immersive audio. And my only job there was to literally get the speakers. He had people that were dedicated there to running the routing, measuring the room, calibrating the actual output, and making sure each speaker was calibrated to the right thing. So that's where, like, a lot of people are kind of scared about immersive audio. So, like, having this is actually pretty cool. And if you guys have never seen the 360 plugin, if you've ever used, what is it? The Waves Jeff Brower plugin?
Yeah, Brower Motion.
Yeah, Brower Motion. It's kind of reminiscent of the Brower Motion look, where you see the bubble in the head and stuff. Well, it's kind of like that, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to look up the Brower Motion,
just look
Google,
up the 360 plugin. Yeah. But if you're listening to this and you're on the road, please do not pull out your phone. You will get yelled at like I do by my wife.
Imagining people like, I want to know what the 360 module looks like, and then they look up the Brower Motion plugin. Oh, that's what it looks like. No, just look it up.
Yeah, just go to 360ra.com. You can check it out.
Okay, so real quick, before we talk more about 360 audio, Kevin has prepared a little demo. So we're going to take a break. We're going to shut the F up, and we're going to allow you to listen to Kevin move some things around. It's already uploaded as binaural output. So if you hear things go behind you or below you or above you, this part of the podcast, you want to put headphones on for. Like, in general, this is not going to work out of your iPhone speakers or out of your computer speakers. Like, put on headphones.
Might work in your car.
No,
it won't work in the car. But put on some headphones, right? And we're going to mess around with some binaural stuff. Kevin, before we start playing this audio file, tell us a little bit of what you're going to mess around with, what people should be listening for.
So this is just to make sure that we don't get in trouble. I just produced a little something for you guys. And it's basically just like a beat with some synths and some snares and hats and stuff. But I'm basically going to take the snare and just move it around the circle. I'm going to move it up and down and around you. And you'll just be able to hear that in your headphones actually move to that location. And the way that happens is something called an HRTF. That stands for head-related transfer function. It's a profile for how you hear in an environment. And this is specifically a generic HRTF. Mm-hmm. So it's not perfect because anatomically we're all different. Yeah. When we were talking about VME earlier, that is a perfect HRTF because it's mapped to your anatomy. Mm-hmm. And your body basically, your brain understands how you hear based on your head shape, your ear size, et cetera. And the way that happens is three different parameters. I'm going to get a little nerdy. You have ILD, which is interaural level difference. So let's say you have sound coming from the left. It's going to be louder in your left ear than your right ear. So that level difference, your brain understands, okay, it's coming from the left. You have interaural time difference. So if it's coming from the, if the sound's coming from your, the left, it's going to hit your left ear before it hits your right ear. Mm-hmm. And that little millisecond of difference allows you to understand where it's coming from. And then you have monaural spectral cues, and that's the filter from your face that allows you to perceive elevation. And we're recreating those three factors and some more factors as well, like impulse response of a room, et cetera, for you to understand the location of sound objects. So
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to end up researching the way we detect elevation, because I feel like understanding that more would actually be a great topic in the future.
Okay. I want to be very clear before we start playing this clip that typically, like if you've heard binaural recordings in the past, like a big famous one on YouTube is like the 360 sound haircut, where you can hear the buzzer go around behind your head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the big difference is typically in binaural recordings up until now is a production thing, meaning there's a binaural microphone, two microphones, literally in the shape of a head. Look this up. It's another $10,000 mic.
It's the Neumann KM.
There's a couple of them. Yeah. There's a couple of them. But the microphones are in the actual like silicone ears, like in the ear canal of the thing. So like, you can actually hear all of the phase and the stuff changing, which kind of like the psychoacoustics of it all make it feel like the buzzer, the haircut is behind your head. It's above you. The door is opening way to your left, things of that nature. But what 360 audio is doing is these are regular mono tracks that are rendered binaural post-production. So this is not recorded with a binaural head. This is recorded. Like you can do this post-production and decide to do immersive and binaural afterwards and fold it down to binaural afterwards. So this is what we're talking about. I just wanted to clarify on that real quick. Listen for the snare. We're going to move around. Kevin, roll the tape.
Sounds great. Please wear headphones.
You listen on headphones and you felt the sensation of things going above, below, behind you. Those are very interesting to hear. And there's a lot of like psychoacoustics and algorithm and numbers that it's beyond me. It's beyond me. I'm not going to pretend like I know. I don't know what I'm talking about, but it is absolutely interesting. I want to hear some creative ways that you've seen some users.
Yeah, I was going to ask this.
Like a producer, like how would a producer use this and what creative ways have you seen people use it?
Yeah, is there any compatibility with like head tracking? Like if you were to look to your left, you see, you kind of face the sources on the left?
At this point, no.
Okay.
That being said, I do think that's an important part of it for sure. So what I would say about 360 is personally in my mixes, what I like to do is, if you move an object, it can be a little bit distracting. It can be very helpful in a theatrical setting because that's what's happening. Like a plane's flying above you. It's moving above you. You're supposed to almost look up and see the plane. Mm-hmm. But in music, sometimes movement can just take you out of the actual mix. Mm-hmm. What
that's
I like
true.
To do
yeah. this is true.
Is do ascend to movement, mm-hmm. right? So I might do ascend with like some sort of widener, like an S1 imager, and then I have like Pan Man, And that just gives my synth like movement behind me when I still have like the stereo pair of the synth maybe above just or in
fixed
front.
In a position behind or yeah.
And it just gives you more feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your hand, your hair stand up on your arms.
Mm-hmm.
What I also like to do is use, I learned this from Greg Penny, an amazing engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He says in immersive that anything that's above and behind you is going to activate your fight or flight instincts.
Yeah.
So high frequencies like hi-hats or synth or even guitars, if you put those above and behind you, it really helps you kind of, it just helps immerse you, for lack of a better term. And also, just realize that we're not dealing with a master compressor or limiter.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a limiter in our plugin and it works great. That being said, I wouldn't push into it. It's more of a safety limiter.
Yeah, that's just like a general immersive thing.
Yeah.
In general. And lots of headroom.
It's. I appreciate that about immersive because we're bringing back dynamic range into music.
Yeah.
I've had artists in the studio listen to mixes and they say, oh, I never remembered that I played that synth until I heard this. Because they can literally hear every single element of the mix instead of it being pushed into a master compressor and limiter, which honestly takes out the definition of the music.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is, there's a lot of masking that happens when you do that. Yeah. In immersive, there's not.
Yeah. I was going to say that when you mix in stereo, one of the things that we always recommend is at least just checking your mix in mono, not because of mono compatibility. I'm not mixing my records to make it sound good for the worst single mix cube dude. I want it to sound the best. So I'm not doing it for mono compatibility, but because it's frequency maxing, because you can make things sound huge, but you want to make sure that when it's mono, things aren't cloudy or stuff like that. But the cool thing is with immersive audio, you don't ever have to worry about masking. It'll probably sound a lot more natural too, because now you have so much more. You have 360 degrees of space to allow things. So that makes sense that you can hear things that you've never heard before.
What I like though about the concept of 360 so far in headphones is, so when you're working like with like 5.1, right, you're dealing with like less masking issues because you have like dedicated positions and you can actually pan more things around and leave a little more frequency content in each source. Because there's less clouding going on. You're not just trying to slam them through two speakers and that's it. You're slamming them now through five and a sub. But I kind of like the idea that you have a little more pan flexibility and everything. You have a little more depth control. So you can actually, like you said, like if an artist were to hear back a mix and you were to be able to now put something behind them, that's a space we didn't hear in our headphones before. So that's like an experience difference that where it's like, creatively, I can see myself like using a reverb on a snare and really wanting it to hit really hard, but have like that, like everything just crashed in kind of feeling, like have the reverb just be like a very narrow start from the front. And then it just slams open and wide. It slams right behind you. Kind of like, like when you're in an outdoor venue and you can hear the slapback from the buildings that are like 100 feet away. So you have that like, what is that, 100 millisecond slapback delay that you could hear in your headphones? That would be awesome. Like, that'd be a really cool way. Oh my God, gated reverbs just found a new use for me.
A really important part of the immersive process is starting the recording with immersive in mind. So you're actually using multiple microphones, sometimes even a microphone hanging from the ceiling. You can use ambisonic microphones. And it allows you to have an immersive environment in the recording rather than just in the mix. If you take stereo stems, you're not really able to do everything you want to. What I really appreciate in 360 is when I hear a reverb from every single direction.
Yeah.
One issue I have is I hear, in a lot of mixes, I only hear the reverb coming from behind me.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a space where you only hear reverb behind you?
No. No, and typically I hear it like either in front of me or wherever the nearest boundary is to me, you know?
So it's super important that you...
Where's the projection of the sound, you know?
you need to make it realistic. Yeah. As soon as you take the realism out of it, the mix is over.
Yeah.
If it sounds synthetic, it's not immersive.
I mean, what is that reference song everybody always has? It's from Pink Floyd. Is it Money?
Money! Is that the
right? Yeah. Like, I really like what they did, and at that time... considering that it was made on tape, that was a feat of all feats at that time. You know what I mean? So like, I'm curious to hear how, like, what's the new record that's kind of similar, Bubbles or Pop or something like that? Yori or Yoshi.
What the heck are you talking about?
It's like a basketball that kind of drops and it goes and it was recorded in like Midside or something like that.
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
I hear it every year at NAMM since its release. Every speaker testing company has it on their playlist. Like, you can always find it on their playlist as reference songs.
But
I'll find it. I know it's in my title. But it's one of those where, like, I think it was like recorded in Midside. Everything was intended to feel a certain way, even on a stereo plane. So, like, considering that, like, okay, this is much more available, and it being that you can just use it as a plugin, you can do things in post. If you were to track with intention, like you mentioned, I did not mean for that to.
That was
rhyme.
Nice rhyme. Track with intention, like you mentioned.
That was cool. I'm smooth sometimes. Not all the time. Most times not. No.
Yeah, I can.
You can attest to that. But I'm not a very smooth guy, but somehow things work out for me. But yeah, so if I were to track like an acoustic guitar and I wanted to feel like the person that is listening to the song can almost feel like they're singing along to it, I'd almost want to place that guitar just below the listener, but with a little more of that body mic on it, like capturing the cavity where most guitar players, they'll hear the strings, but they hear them below them, not in front of them. Not only that, but you also hear the port. And we don't typically mic up the port a lot of times for like stereo mixes because it's just too boomy and we're going to cut it out. But if we could add a little bit of that boominess and kind of position it just off to your right, a little bit below you, like it might actually create that realism. So I'm kind of excited for it in the sense of creating, like, you know, do you want to feel like you're in the room with the band? Mm-hmm. Do you want to feel like if it's your favorite song to sing along to, how much more can you immerse somebody into the performance? And I'm a big advocate for this. You know me. I don't give a shit if you give me a off-key vocal. If the performance is it, if that take was the take and it emotionally translates, I will work with that.
Okay. Two questions that I have. One, the plugin, what is the cost of that? Is it a subscription
thing? It's $500 one time.
One time.
And then you have lifetime updates, and we're consistently developing it. I'm the person, my main job right now is to break the plugin.
Like that's your job for Sony.
Yeah, like he's the King Kong throwing the barrels at it.
So I literally just stack soothe. You know, that's just an example because that's a plugin that creates a lot of latency,
yeah.
Right? So I'm basically just trying to break it, and I definitely break it. And we're working to get it better.
How many decapitators till death?
Yeah. But, okay. So the second thing that I'm asking is that if I remember correctly, I might be mistaken here, but I've only had the opportunity to upmix one or two songs into immersive audio, into Atmos.
Did you have to upmix it yourself?
Yeah, so I did it myself, and I don't have an Atmos room. So I had to finalize with an Atmos mastering engineer, and I had to go to an Atmos mixing studio just to double check. But if I remember correctly, when I was mixing it, I had to get a third-party plugin to monitor my mix, because I only have stereo. So I got the headphones.
For the fold-down?
So I like it was like real-time folding down the Atmos mix.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like another third party plugin just to freaking monitor it.
Mm.
So it was kind of annoying. It was like a workaround. But in this case, correct me if I'm wrong here. If you get the plugin, it's easy to monitor with headphones. Like it's part of the processing. It's part of the plugin. You're like monitoring with like you can set that as an option.
You just press the headphone button and the generic HRTF comes up. And you're able to monitor in headphones. We also have stereo fold down. If you're a DIY user, I would mix in quad.
Mm-hmm.
If you have like the ability,
what is quad? What is quad?
Quadraphonic, yeah.
So two in the front, like two in the back.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Two in the front, two in the back, and then you literally just get like a $30 laser ruler. If you have the money, get like a super accurate one. Get an SPL meter. Super super important. You'll use it in life. And you just want to measure the distance from the speakers and then just make sure that the speakers have equal SPL emission.
Yeah.
And then you basically just plug in the coordinates from the laser ruler into the plugin. Does a delay compensation for you? You don't need to get any tuning software. If you have the ability to get tuning software and a tuning mic, I would do it.
Yeah, a good cheap option, just entry point, would be like the UMIC 1 from Mini DSP, and then get Room EQ Wizard.
Oh, RQ is crazy.
And that one will tell you your time delays. It has an SPL meter that can be calibrated. You can do interface calibration, and it's completely free on that software. In fact, they even put, like, if you want to donate, you can, but you don't have to.
So, donate if you can.
Yeah. So literally, okay, so the plugin itself also has binaural fold down or whatever, so you can monitor it with headphones. And then all you have to do when you print it is just print the regular exports. What is it called? The ADM? AMD?
Right, so we have ADM, we have MPEG-H. MPEG-H is the current immersive standard, and the reason that immersive uses MPEG-H is because it's encoded and it has a smaller file size.
I was going to say, isn't MPEG related to imagery?
It is. And that's why it attaches so well with movies. It's an immersive standard, but it also allows you to manipulate the audio post as well.
Do you mean that like it will, you could load in an MPEG-H file into it and it will actually reallocate those dots for you?
Basically, MPEG-H just gives you the ability. So the reason why Apple's karaoke mode works is because of MPEG-H audio.
Gotcha.
Because it gives you the ability to mute the vocals.
By the way, this is the first time I've ever heard of a karaoke audio. I've never
heard about it, but I didn't know that you can go that far.
You can. Yeah. I think on Apple Music right now, you can literally mute vocals and then like sing along to the song. There's like a karaoke mode.
I don't have Apple Music, so I'll never.
Really? Yeah. I didn't even know about that. That's fire. Okay. Sorry.
But MPEG, there's this great application I would check out. It's by this amazing engineer, Herbert Waltle. He won the Immersive Grammy last year.
Nice.
Him with Eric Schilling, and then also shout out to Michael Romanowski, one of the best immersive engineers currently just sweeping the Grammys right now. But Herbert made this app called MH2 that allows you to listen to his mixes and then change the mixes. Obviously, you need to make sure you get artist approval before you do that, which he did because the artist was like, oh, yeah, I really want people to interact with my music. The artist's name is Ricky Kesh, and then Stuart Copeland as well, the drummer from The Police. Mm-hmm. And they made this beautiful album called Divine Tides. And it's this beautiful orchestral album that was made in India. And with MH2, you're able to change the mix. You're able to change the positioning of things. You're able to move the change the amplitude of the vocals and the individual instruments and basically make your own mixes in the app and listening in headphones. That's incredible.
Actually pretty cool, especially on like on an educational level. Like for instance, like on a stereo platform, we can't exactly just isolate the vocal or the kick and be like, what does the kick actually sound like if we were to isolate it? Because in the mix, it sounds great, but what kind of tonality does it hold on its own? So you can use MH2 in conjunction with MPEG-H files.
Exactly. Yep.
That's something I'm interested in. I'm curious about that.
And the reason why is because the sources are separated.
Yeah.
It's not like you need to use source separation. They're already separated in the MPEG-H file.
Yeah.
And I'll just go back to the encoding really quick. The reason why we encode is because in ADM, if it's like a 4-minute song that has, so ADM is called an audio definition model.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically multiple mono stems, and each mono stem has the location metadata built in.
Mm-hmm.
So you can load that and it is the full res render of your immersive mix up to 128 objects.
Nice.
That being said, if you have a 4-minute song, 48K, 24-bit, 128 objects, that's going to be like 4 gigs, 3 gigs of data. Mm-hmm. So to stream that is impossible. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why MPEG-H exists, is because people don't want you to load up basically an entire movie every time you're loading up a song to play. If you have limited bandwidth, you can't do that. So we have multiple pre-render levels, and each of those levels renders level 0 is 5 objects, up to level 3 is 24. So depending on your bandwidth, you can always listen to the mix in immersive.
Gotcha.
That's right. I forgot that there's levels that you can output to. Anyway, so a couple questions. This is more going back to the general idea of audio here. There's a couple of variables with immersive audio, with music specifically, that's always been talked about, and the pushback with immersive audio is one, consumption. Like, nobody has, it's very difficult And nobody is willing to put up a hi-fi system with how many ever speakers, right? So consumption is
spending,
difficult.
Like if you're just everyday Joe spending $50 per speaker and you need a 712, 714 system just for Atmos, we're talking about buying what is that?
Yeah, how many speakers? Is how many speakers?
12 speakers total, 714, that's 7 plus 5.
Yeah, so it's just speakers. It's just too much. And then you have to calibrate them. And blah. So yeah. It's like, and then you were talking about with Sony, it's like getting the late. So that consumption is difficult. And that's been a problem. There's a solution to that, which we'll talk about in a moment here. The second thing is musicality. Like convincing the general consumers that 360 audio sounds good in music. And this is a personal opinion right now. When I hear Apple spatial audio stuff, and I think I said it at the beginning of the pod, I don't like it for music. It doesn't sound good. I genuinely think, and that's even in a speaker environment, not just a fold down to headphones. Yeah. So the cool thing about folding down the headphones is that that kind of solves the consumer problem. Like if you can fold down everything into a binaural headphone render, right? Then you don't need 10 to 16 speakers in any format for immersive audio. That solves the consumer issue. That's why Atmos and immersive audio in this generation, Sony 360 in this generation is such a hot topic right now, is because it can fold down into headphones, right? And then the second thing is Sony 360 made specifically for music first, and hearing the binaural fold down, it quite frankly, in my opinion, sounds more for music. Like it is for music and you can hear it. And that's why I like it. And that's why I'm interested in seeing where it goes. Tell us about, the consumer, right? Think about the consumer, someone that's listening to music, right? How do you think immersive audio is going to, especially Sony 360, how do you think that's going to play for the consumers in the decades going forward?
I think the most important aspect for consumption is headphones by far, because they're accessible. Right now, in the future, always, 360 RA works for any headphone. You could literally pick up some headphones at the gas station, plug them into your phone, listen to Amazon Music, and you would still get a 360 reality audio experience. Obviously, the better the headphone, the better your experience. That being said, it's accessible. It doesn't matter what device you're playing off of, as long as you're listening to the DSP with 360. You can also go on YouTube and there's some 360 RA binaural videos as well if you want to check it out. But that's the most accessible option. And eventually we're going to get to the point where it matches the speakers. You've heard with VME that we can match the speakers with the personalized measurement.
That would be insane if we can, like, if technology gets to the point where that's an accessible thing. Where it's like you can go to Walmart and buy like a $20 calibration set.
Well, I don't know if you've seen
that would be
this.
Insane if technology ever gets that far. So, I mean, it's not feasible right now, but
it's very close, because even the soundbar that I have has what they like to call like surround mode, which is basically it pins a sound against your walls and stuff, and it listens for the reflection points, and then it adapts its actual output based on that, so that it can actually feel like a surround sound setup in your room, but it's all coming from this little soundbar.
Does it work? That's the thing, though.
I'll say it like this. It's not the most expensive soundbar, because I don't really watch TV like that. And it did actually surprise me on first listen when I was like, not really caring if it sounded good. I was just like, let me see the surround mode. I'm like, oh shit. And I'm looking to my sides and I'm like, it actually sounds like it came from like my left and right. It didn't feel like it came from in front of me, pan to the left. It felt like it was actually to the side of me.
Oh, okay. So you think that technology is also going to be part of...
Yeah, it's very close to being able to say like, you know what? Like if we can create binaural experiences through a soundbar, that would be amazing, because they can already semi-create, you know, the sensation of a surround, a 5.1 surround with just a soundbar.
And this is interesting because... the motivation for the audio industry to go into immersive is very high, specifically because of film and TV.
Yeah.
Like,
and this soundbar was only like $300 at most.
And quite frankly, the movies, film and TV industry is 20 to 30 times larger than the audio recorded audio industry. So yeah. Like, as long as people don't stop watching movies and TV in the theater or keep investing in surround sound, like this immersive audio in music is not going to go away. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea that like eventually you're going to have to embrace it. And right now 360 for music. And as far as like, it's literally a plugin and you don't need any third party rendering. No, or
you don't need the dad mon or anything.
Oh my gosh. Don't even get me started on that stuff. But it's really interesting that hopefully as time goes on, the innovators and the technology and Sony, they're already thinking about consumption.
Yeah.
The consumer, how to make it easier for the consumer. And so, that's why it's exciting.
I have a question. Maybe my ignorance is showing here, but is 360 available on a VR platform?
At this point, no.
Okay, because I'm curious because VR has become such a, you know, it could be the new, what were they calling them? Hoverboards, the little motor stand in place and scoot yourself back and forth.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of thing. No, I'm just saying. So like VR is very popular right now. Everybody's doing like their thing with it. So much so that Apple has released their own VR goggles, whatever they're called. I don't really know what they're called. But point is, you know, the cost of VR stuff has gone down significantly, which made it much more accessible, which means, you know, immersive audio in VR worlds seems to be like they're just going to go hand in hand. It's inevitable.
Do you guys play PlayStation?
I do. Well, so, I'll be honest. I haven't turned mine on in like a year, but I'm a PlayStation
guy. I'm a Nintendo guy.
I'm a PlayStation guy with a Nintendo.
So you were talking about VR.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if I cut you off.
No, you're all good.
But this relates.
No, please
greatly.
Cut him off. Please yeah, cut him.
Like, cut me.
So if you want to...
Make me bleed.
If you want to listen to immersive audio with VR, I highly recommend the PSVR 2. Okay. And PlayStation has this incredible audio engine called Tempest. Mm-hmm. It can actually load plugins. It's what? Ridiculous. It has DSP on it.
So I can put a FabFilter Pro Q3?
Not as a consumer, but like there is the ability through something called Audio Kinetic and WWISE. If you want to check that out, if you want to get really nerdy into video game production, please check it out. Mm-hmm. It's honestly a little above my head because I just mix music. But I have heard from a lot of game developers how they do this. And the Tempest engine in PlayStation is similar to 360. It doesn't have the same depth. And the reason is, so there's this constant battle in binaural. Mm-hmm. Location versus frequency response. Mm-hmm. And it's a hot topic because some immersive formats focus on frequency response. It sounds like a stereo fold down. It literally sounds like stereo. And 360, they say, you know what? We're going to push the boundary. And the frequency response might not be perfect because it is an HRTF and it's a generic one, but at least you can hear something behind you. And I really appreciate that because that's what's going to push immersive audio forward. Yeah. We need the ability to localize things. But back to what I was saying about PlayStation, Tempest, you don't feel the same amount of separation, the same amount of distance. Mm-hmm. The frequency response is perfect and you still feel things behind you. It's incredible. And then that combined with the VR headset, it's an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, because I'm not going to lie. Like, I think the video game I play the most is like Pokemon. I'm a nerd. But the funny thing is like, I love God of War and games like that, like very theatric kind of video games, like big stories. But the soundtracks to them have always been great. And I've seen now people like using VR for like, you know, mainstay consoles. That's why I'm so curious. I'm like, I wonder, could you use 360 to like create the mix and be able to deliver to like, I guess the production houses that are receiving these files? Or
God of War is a great example. The God of War soundtrack, Ragnarok, was mixed in 360 Reality Audio.
Oh, really?
So when you're on PlayStation and you're playing the game and you're listening to the soundtrack and headphones, you're listening to 360. If you have an immersive setup, you'll be listening in 360 RA.
Okay, well, now I have to like re-listen
to that
game.
Yeah, that one's like...
It's a couple of years old.
No, it's also like one of the best games ever.
God of War just in general is one of my favorite lines of all time. Like me and my sister used to play hours of like God of War 1 and 2. And it was just one of those like we'd stay in the room for like 8 hours a day.
I didn't realize that. Okay, so 360 RA is currently being used in video game
for music mixing for the soundtracks. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Tempest, the reason why Tempest is used is because you need to get approvals for the video games, right? Mm-hmm. And people don't like when there's a little bit of sound coloration. So they have the Tempest engine because it's very accurate in frequency, but it still gives you the location.
Okay.
That's super neat. All right, well, let's close out the episode soon. Kevin, on a personal level, I know you represent Sony, but on a personal level, Kevin, you're probably very optimistic about immersive sound. Where do you think immersive audio in music is going to go in the next decade?
That's a great question. I think immersive will be the new stereo. I think we'll start calling immersive audio just audio and then stereo, stereo, just like how we called stereo, stereo, and then mono, mono when stereo came out in the 50s and eventually became implemented. Because if you have the ability to go to an immersive studio or to listen to an immersive soundbar with any immersive format, it will change your life. Like, you'll never want to listen to stereo again.
Yeah.
I think stereo is really good at achieving loudness. I think you can do amazing things in stereo, but it's 2024. Like, stereo started in 1957. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be what stereo is now in 10 years. It's going to fall behind. I think immersive is the future.
I would love to see the tools that become developed because of immersive audio. For instance, I forget this guy's name, but he used to make like little wood boxes for his 5.1 surround. So Westlake was selling them for a while, and he was like specifically selling them through Westlake.
Wait. Wooden boxes?
Yeah, there were these little wooden boxes with like almost like a Joy-Con control to it, and it even had like little Joy-Con buttons. It almost looked like an old arcade controller.
Okay, so it's a controller.
Yeah, kind of. But it had faders and everything on it too. But they were so simple, but they were almost like $2,000 a piece.
And this is to control and automate
5.1 surround. Okay. Because this was back in like 2012 when like the Atmos even became a thing in homes. You know what I mean? Like, that, it wasn't even a big topic at all. So 5.1 was still the dominant platform. But this guy was making these controllers, but at the time that the cost of his controllers were even then like just astronomically out of the range of the consumer or anybody that's trying to enter into surround. You also had consoles like the C24, which was mainly for like stereo use. A lot of production studios had them, but like it could do surround sound. You had consoles like, what was the Icon? The Icon was a big mainstay back in like 2010 and everything. Now it's been cycled out and the S6 has replaced it. I'm curious to see where immersive audio goes when it comes to the tool sets available. Because right now, immersive audio controllers are still kind of expensive, which means that it's still pretty inaccessible to have like some tools that make the workflow that much easier.
Well, yeah, you can always just use your mouse and keyboard. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been doing for a hot minute to the point where people just got rid of the console because it's not easy enough.
The dude, you just pulled up a little app.
Is that
Kevin just pulled up
controller?
A little?
So this is shout out to Tony Joy and Nuno Fonseca from Sound Particles. They are amazing.
Sound Particles, those guys are badass.
They're so cool. And they also, what I appreciate. So I used to be an educator in the recording and production space, and I used to teach people how to make beats on their phone.
Yeah.
That used to be my job because I would go to a high school and the program I used to work for. Shout out to Street Poets, amazing program. We would bring MPCs, but those aren't accessible, and we would take them back with us. So instead, we'd started producing on the phone
With guys Koala using the sampler. Oh, okay.
Oh, dude, it's literally panning this app. You can touch it, or you can literally move the phone around. It's using motion controls on the phone.
And this is just an app that exists on your phone. It connects to the plugin, and it allows you to move an object from your phone either by tilting it or by touching and moving it.
Okay.
And that's where I think we're going to go. I think because everything's digital, everything's going to be on a tablet or a phone. Like, you're going to be like, right now I'm using an Apple Pencil and an iPad as a mixer. And I literally do like my panning and my plug-in controls and everything from an iPad.
So I'm not going to lie. There's, In a fantasy world that I'm thinking of right now, it's Lou running free in the wild. But I can see myself having like a PlayStation controller and just having like the two Joy-Cons and being like, okay, I want to feel like the reverb just went left and just be able to hit a Joy-Con like controller and just like almost pan my view of the sound. Like, I feel like the tools can all be like I'm very excited to see how it works. Everybody's going to have a different workflow, just like they do now in mixing. Some people like templates, some people don't. Some people like writing folders, some people don't. So I'm curious to see how the tools and what becomes kind of like a norm.
Yeah, yeah. And to close out the episode, I'm most interested in seeing how companies like Sony continue to make it more and more accessible for consumers to access immersive audio. So for example, like I love the idea that anybody can listen to immersive audio folded down into a binaural rendering, right? And because you're right, with stereo, that's interesting because you're like, eventually stereo is going to go away or it's going to become like a an older technology. I agree with that. But I think the only thing that's stopping it from ever going away is accessibility and just how easy it is for consumers. Because right now, even for the producers, us on our end, like it's not the most simple thing yet.
Yeah.
Right? I think Sony 360 RA, it's a single plugin. It automatically will render it for you and you can change the formats and things like that. So we're getting really close. It's not as complicated as people think it is. But it's also not as easy to consume and easy to, like it takes a little bit more thought.
Yeah.
And we're going to figure out where the line is because we want to raise the bar as producers. We want to learn more and to raise the bar. We're never going to say lower the standard for us. We're going to say we're going to raise ourselves up to that level. And then the consumers are also going to have to figure out a way to be able to access it. Like the reason why Spotify is doing so well is because it's so easy for the consumer.
Yeah.
Right? Spotify is never going to go away. It's always going to be dominant because no matter what Apple and Amazon does, it's like Spotify thinks about is puts the consumer first.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so many damn users, right? And so I'm very curious to see, like, I'm most excited about all of these companies make it more, like, immersive audio more accessible. And I think that's going to be the thing that makes it the standard that you were talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's inevitable. And I think it's inevitable. Like, I'm not kidding about the idea of, like, maybe 20 years down the line, we can go buy a Sony headphone, you know, little pack where it comes with little accessible microphones that you just stick in your ears just and you can just get RME built into your smartphone right there.
I think what's really going to happen, and right now this actually already exists with a lot of Sony headphones, is you have the ability to take pictures of your ears and apply a custom HRTF to applications.
By the way, so if you guys don't know what we mean by like your ears playing a part, like physically, it just... A good example is this, sit in front of your speakers or any, your TV, whatever you're familiar with, and just push your earlobes forward and just see how it changes how you hear things. Like, don't cup your ears. Like, I actually had a client who would reference my mixes sitting behind me, and she would go like this all the time, cupping your ears. And I was like, nope, you're just adding comb filtering. But yeah, literally the shape of your ear does play a factor, which is why this like bit of technology is so impressive.
This is for you, Spencer, with the you know, the 120 channels of HDTV receiving from your head. Those big antennas, dude. That's gonna come in handy.
I think apps like Space Controller are and combined with 360, like 360 is the rendering and it allows you to do the panning from your computer. I think like things that are mobile, it allows you to be able to be in the middle of your mix room, in the middle of the mix position, and you don't have to be in front of the faders. Like, you can literally move around and you can still pan things. That's the future. Like, I think if we can make something accessible to someone's phone or someone's device, that's a lot cheaper and more readily available. And then on headphones, like, that's the future of immersive audio. And having that translate to the speaker system is where it's at.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Yesterday I was listening. I don't know why I like listening to like Steve Jobs interviews and things of that nature. I think the dude's kind of a fascinating dude. But there was one where like somebody in a crowd called him out and like saying like, you know, one, what have you guys done with the technology lately? And what have you done honestly for computers in the last 7 years since you've been like in charge? And the funny thing is his response was like, well, we focused on the consumer experience. You know, we want people to actually experience something and have it much more available and simple to use and this and that. And that's what 360 kind of feels to me, where certain immersive platforms require so much to get a decent experience out of it. While this just seems to be kind of broken down into a simple package where anybody can pretty much access it. If it's available on Tidal already, that means me as a Tidal user, I can just set it to immersive audio mode and hit the ground running, because I'm guessing that works with my AirPod Maxes or my AirPod Pros, which means I don't even have to buy anything. I already have it. The immersive audio option is already there. And if I wanted to get into it, I could just buy the plugin for $500, which is cheaper than, you know, getting a whole, you know, 714 setup in my studio and everything and just get to work.
Yeah. And that's like its own engine. Anyway, I was going to say too, the last thing I was going to say is Kevin did the demo with me last week. And he's like, "Hey dude, I got to end this call like 20 minutes. Cause I got this meeting. Cause DK, you're not as important." No, I'm just kidding. I'm teasing. But,
that was the happened, nice way he
dude,
said it.
20 minutes. Like I honestly, I was like, "Oh, you were explaining everything." And it was pretty straightforward. Like even the UI, I'm a big stickler with like UI and UX, like user experience in the graphics, like being able to tell, like you want to have a user interface that you don't need to read instructions. Like it's pretty straightforward. And as you were explaining everything, I was like, yeah, we didn't need to do this call.
Yeah.
I was like,
the first thing is like when you guys were listening to the example earlier, where I'm watching it happen on the laptop and I'm like, man, even a fucking monkey can do this.
Yeah, you literally just click and drag on the object.
Yeah, now keep in mind, me and DK do not actively do 360 at this moment, so the comment of a monkey can do it just means that I'm actually that much more motivated to just jump right in versus being like, fuck, I need to set up new templates, new routing systems, new this and that. Am I even monitoring in the proper setup? Do I have the proper licenses? The entry point is so low barrier that it's that much more inviting to try something new and offer a new service if you don't already.
Yeah. So on that note, if you're interested in getting a mix done in 360 RA, you could hit me up.
If you need it mastered, hit me up.
So yeah, thank you so much, Kevin. Any other thoughts that you want to end this episode with?
I just wanted to thank you all for your time and for sharing education free for people. That's such a big part of my life. Like,
we didn't mention, but you're like, you, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but like you listen to the podcast actually.
Oh yeah, totally.
Shit. Yeah.
No, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
No.
That's so funny. That's so funny. I mean, amazing. And,
so tell me, do I sound just as bad in person?
Shut up. I genuinely appreciate the fact that you all are sharing and you all are opening the door for younger engineers. There's so much gatekeeping in this industry and I really dislike it.
It's surprisingly not always on purpose.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing too. Like people don't realize how they're accidentally keeping
themselves
or like they're like, it's a secret. It's an industry secret. Like they're kind of like secretive, but it's really just a bunch of people that like don't want people to realize how easy it actually is or accessible actually everything actually is.
Which I don't know if you recorded the episode yet with James about like the simplistic truth and secret of like success.
There you go. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Thank you, Kevin.
Of course. Yeah. Thank y'all. Cause I really do. My goal in life is to build a community of younger engineers that can build another community of younger engineers. Because I think the only thing that mixing should have to do with is how you listen and your work ethic. And that's it. It shouldn't have to do with what you have access to. Because right now it's all accessibility.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Which is kind of the point of the podcast.
That is a really well-spoken way of expressing how I feel. Yeah. It shouldn't be an accessibility issue. It isn't an accessibility issue. It's okay. You're right.
Yeah.
Also, it's my ears are just physically better than everybody else's, so I just...
Well, you know...
I
have shaped ears.
Oh yeah, you know what? Sony can put that to the test. Sony can put it to the test.
So I'm gatekeeping my ears. You can't have them.
you know, I will say this. It would be nice to have a measure of my ears and then just fucking invert the positioning of them and just hear each other's ear reaction to the other ear.
Oh, it sounds
like
bad.
No,
if you listen to his measurement, it just won't work for you.
No, that's, exactly. Yeah, like, but could you imagine placing your left ear measurement in your right ear and vice versa?
That would make me nauseous, I think. I don't know.
Curiosity is striking, and I think I should eat nothing but like the most disgusting food before that.
Well, you could just try VME and just flip the headphones.
Oh, I need to try this.
We're getting into a deeper rabbit hole. Thank you,
Lou. At this point, we're just having fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Again, if you're interested in any of this stuff from Sony, first off, headphones, microphones, go to your local retailer. We are sponsored by Sweetwater. We have an affiliate deal with Sweetwater. So go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/Sweetwater. Anything you purchase through Sweetwater, we get
something.
We get a little bit of something. To be honest, it's not that big of a deal, but if enough people do it, it becomes something substantial. We appreciate you.
You don't have to send us a donation, but if you would like to support us in a way that helps, why not buy yourself something by using the link? And that already helped us.
There you go.
Well, help us by buying yourself stuff.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more, obviously, you can look up the headphones and the microphones on Sweetwater, look at the reviews they have online, GearSpace, everything like that. For the plugin, they go to what website?
360RA.com. And if you want to check out VME, just look up 360 VME on Google. If you want to do an inquiry for your own studio, you can scroll to the very bottom of the page, fill out the inquiry form, and we're happy to help.
We talked about VME at the beginning, but once again, just to recap, that is the Sony sends people out, they measure your ears, put the microphones in your ear canals. You take your room around. Okay. That's a couple thousand dollars to get the proprietary, depending on where you are, plus the added travel expenses, for your profile. Is there like a plugin or something that you need to apply the profile to?
So when you get the profile, you'll get the standalone software and you basically just route that standalone software as if it was your audio driver.
So part of that 2000 or whatever, however much, couple thousand dollars you pay for is part of that standalone software.
Exactly. I highly recommend, if you have the ability now, the measurement is available at Gold Digger Studio in LA and the Hit Factory in New York.
Gold Digger is awesome. I know Hit Factory in New York. Yeah.
Ed and Simon are amazing people. Shout out to them. Right now, you can actually get the measurement at Gold Diggers for $500, which is the cheapest you're going to get the measurement. I'm sure it's going to change because what Sony is doing is they're making sure that the studio is involved in the pricing because the studio needs to get money in the back end. We're not trying to take out the studio business. It's that good that you can mix in your headphones at that studio.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the studio will be, it's going to be a subscription model and the studio is going to be making money in the back end too because we need to support the studio that allows us to use their acoustic IP, right?
So to a certain degree, so you're saying as another business model is if I really love the sound of my room, again, I'm going to Japan this year in the summer. I'm going to take my room with me. I can get a measurement. And on top of that, I could sell my room.
If you have an amazing mix room and you want to be a part of the VME business, just fill out that inquiry form.
Regardless, I mean, my room is amazing, but on top of that, more importantly, it's my mix room.
Yeah.
And y'all know my mixes. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. That's interesting to think about, like if I'm like streaming on Twitch too, and they're able to hear
like
the stream going through their filter so they can hear the music. Like if they're like, listen to my mix or we're doing mix feedback, they can listen to exactly what I'm hearing.
I've done QC with that actually with 360 RA mixes. I bring the artist in. Mm-hmm. I get their ear measurement and we play back with their ear measurement through audio movers and I stream my 360 mix and they hear exactly how it sounds in the studio I mixed it in.
That's cool. Okay, I
would want to learn more about that. Yeah.
That technology. We spent a lot of time on other things, but like low-key, that for me is like super cool. And what is Sony doing? Is this kind of like a passive back-end thing, or are they trying to push the technology forward with this?
They're trying to push the technology forward.
Trying to make it slowly more accessible, figure it out.
Exactly.
Okay, so it is something that they are currently investing in. Like they want to better. Okay,
It's actually been in development for 20 years. The reason why it became why it became a product is because of the pandemic. Film mixers weren't able to mix in the mix rooms because they were all closed. And there was a very limited amount of population that was allowed at Sony Pictures. So people would get VME measurements at the theater and then mix the entire movie soundtrack or Foley, FX, whatever, at their home, go back to the theater, QC it, and it would be dead on from headphones.
Again, I cannot emphasize how... Okay, so if you ever go to NAMM, go to the Sony booth and sign up. They always have limited spots, like you can't do it. But if you go to NAMM next year or whenever and do the little test, they put the microphones in your ear, it's freaky, man. It is wild. And this is my biggest thing with like other competitor headphones where they like emulate different studios is that what's the point of getting a headphone and like a studio... even if it is super realistic to that studio, it's still somebody else's studio. So it's like, now you have to get used to somebody else's room.
That's why this VME actually sounds interesting to me, because I've heard people tell me like, oh, it's the best thing I've ever done, you know, getting these headphones. I'm like, you know, if I was to get VME myself, first thing I'm probably doing is just making sure that I love the acoustics in my space, and that's my space, because that's obviously going to play a factor. But if I had to learn somebody else's acoustics and then take the headphones off and listen in my acoustics, what the fuck? Like,
yeah,
it's a model I never really fully understood the success of the gimmick.
All right, well, let's end this episode because we're going really long. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you like any of our resources, mixingmusicpodcast.com. Thank you so much to K-Stereo Kevin for coming through and sharing a lot of wisdom. Obviously, you know what you're talking about. You're very excited about it on a personal level. And thank you so much for bringing the demo for us. Thank you so much to Sony for sponsoring this episode. Again, just check it out, man. Check it out. 360 RA, 360 RME.
VME.
VME, sorry.
Virtual mixing environment. No worries.
Virtual mixing environment. Go check out the microphones, the headphones. We're using the microphone and the headphones right now. Mm-hmm. So go check those out. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Stay saucy.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.